Packet Pusher sponsor TwoFin has pioneered a policy-based approach to network security management using automation and analytics. As a result, you can make network changes in minutes instead of days, reliably and securely. TwoFin, the security policy company. Visit them at www.twofin.com and tell them the Packet Pusher sent you. Before we start the show, sponsor Ixia wants you to know they are running an event called The Network Makeover. Register via ixiacom.com/packetpushers. Why? Somebody's going to win $50,000 worth of Ixia gear. Worth it. ixiacom.com/packetpushers to register now. Welcome to the Packet Pushers Heavy Networking Podcast. You've got Greg and Ethan here. And Mr. Farrow, this show, you wanted to talk about SD-WAN myths. And as this is how I viewed the setup of this show through the eyes of Slack in our Slack group. You were at the SD-WAN summit in London, I don't know, last week or the week before, whatever. And you just got all fired up because you're like, I can't believe some of the things people are saying. I don't know what's happening right now. I'm really fired up and angry. And I want to talk about all these myths and misconceptions and things. And next thing I know, I'm staring at this Google document that's just filled with diatribe about SD-WAN, what's happening in the future, how you should deal with it, what you should be thinking about it, what phase of it that we're in. And my goodness, we're going to talk about SD-WAN myths, fallacies, incompetence, and so on today. And I feel like I'm like your ripping boy, Greg, where I'm just going to stand here, say things meekly, and you're going to come back at me and be like, roar! So I don't know, man.
I might, to be fair, if you shut up.
Sorry, I have been going on a bit.
So, you've got to get your word. You've got to get your words in while you can.
You're about to take over. So what did get you all fired up at the WAN summit?
Well, this is a general sort of an SD-WAN thing. And I've written a couple of blog posts on this topic about I don't believe generally that SD-WAN is hard. Like, you know, a lot of people talk about WANs being incredibly difficult and arcane and all that sort of stuff. And I kind of, there's an argument to be made that that a routed WAN with traditional IP routers and the sort of the legacy technology that they represent is hard, right? And beyond the competency of an ordinary enterprise IT operation to do them. That's not a contestable argument, I don't think. Do you agree?
I don't think that it's hard particularly because the whole point of it is ease of management and operations. So that's one of the value props anyway,
So what happened was when I go to conferences where people are talking about SD-WAN, the people who are sponsoring these events are often managed service providers, right? And I'm not a huge fan of managed service providers in the first place because a managed service provision is basically where you outsource something. You admit that you're incompetent at something or you're incompetent at doing something or you declare it not to be your core competency, which is you're incompetent, right? If it's not your core competency, then it's an incompetency, logically. So you give it to other people. Now, most of the time when people outsource things, in IT, you're outsourcing your problems. It's a problem you can't solve or a problem you don't want to manage or it's too difficult or it's too painful and the executives think or dream that giving it away to somebody else will take away the pain. You would have seen that plenty of times.
Oh, lots and lots of times. Been in the middle of those, been the one that was outsourced to, been in the middle of the outsourcing discussions. Yes. And keep going. We're still in the intro. I don't want to go down the rabbit holes yet, but keep going.
So the problem with outsourcing that I see generally is that people take a problem and give it away to somebody else in the theory that the other person can solve that problem or make the problem go away by giving it to somebody else. My experience, my lived experience of this is outsourcing something that's broken makes it more broken because the problem doesn't get fixed because you outsource the problem, you write a contract around the problem, and the problem gets locked in stone because the third party says, my pricing is based on I will do what's in the contract, and you put the problem into the contract, right? And so this whole outsourcing idea was always flawed. Now, outsourcing does work for certain things, right? One of the things that it works for is cleaning toilets, for example. It is true that cleaning buildings is not the core competency of, say, your average business, say making donuts, for example. But the thing about outsourcing toilets, toilet cleaning is it's really easy to measure success of a toilet cleaning service, right? You walk into the toilet, you look at the bathrooms, are the walls visibly clean? Are the toilets visibly clean? That's pretty easy to measure competency. Fair?
Absolutely fair. Right? I'm holding if back right now because I got things to say on this topic. So you get it out. So the final part, I'm going to take my turn.
Right. So when you outsource your IT, what most people do in-house is get rid of their expensive in-house resources. So now they have no competency to measure whether the third party is doing anything well. And so the problem becomes an even bigger problem because the outsourcer just makes it worse, usually. And you've got nobody in-house to measure whether the outsourcing is being done according to the contract. So I have this real problem with outsourcing generally, just to get that monkey off my back. Now,
just before you go into the next phase, I have to stand in here because Greg, if I could stand up and cheer at this point, I absolutely would. I have so many stories that I could go into, but companies don't friggin' get this at all, what you just said.
No.
They look at IT ops as a cost center. They think, oh, it's a cost center. It's something that I can outsource. And there's this utter lack of comprehension about how unique IT is within their business and that they are technology driven and that hiring capable people that are going to love their IT, that is really important for their success and for their growth and for their ability to transform. And you can't transform unless you know where you're at. And if you outsourced it, they haven't got a friggin' clue unless you outsource the body that lives on site with you every day or at least week by week. And if you did that, why didn't you just hire a human to be with you all the time anyway?
It drives me nuts. Now, in this era of digital transformation, right? So we talked about digital. We did a show a few weeks ago about digital transformation. And my definition of digital transformation is when technology becomes as valuable to the company as management or accounting or sales, right? That's really the fundamentals of digital transformation is companies don't outsource salespeople. Companies don't outsource executives. You know, they keep them in-house. Companies don't outsource accounting because they're seen as core business competencies. Digital transformation is exactly the same thing, where IT stops being a cost center and becomes a core business competency. You don't outsource your invoicing or your general ledger, right? You don't hire an accounting firm to come in, you know, and outsource your accounting services at all. You do it all in-house. And the reason is because keeping tight control on your money, knowing your cash flow, preparing the general ledger, having control, detailed control and in-house expertise is critical to the business. And that is digital transformation in IT, is when the business says technology is absolutely core to what we do. So if you ever want to be digitally transformed and the word outsourcing comes up, it's time to quit and move on to the next company, which is genuinely digitally transformed. Because I can promise you, working for a company that isn't digitally transformed is miserable.
Now, there is a disconnect here, I think, that happens with executives that want to make this outsourcing decision. They think they're saving money. So, I've chatted with a number of people that are at the C-level. They're a CIO, they're a CTO. And the disconnect seems to happen if they've never worked in ops. If you talk to a CIO or a CTO who has worked in ops, they came up through the ranks, they're, I think, less likely to outsource for the most part. The ones that haven't been there, haven't been in the trenches, they don't know what they're trying to outsource. They just kind of think it's easy, and then they'll end up with some mid-level manager person saying yes all the time because it wants to be seen as like this cost-cutting leader, and they're going to blow smoke up the C-level's backside and say, yeah, boss, we can outsource. Half these people we hired are dead weight anyway. Fire them all. It's clean house and outsource. We're going to save all this money and it'll be amazing. Yeah. And then
we're going to pay for the outsourcing by getting rid of the in-house people. That's usually how it works. And the other one that does this is in the vendor cycle. When the vendor is selling a shiny new toy, you know, this big chassis switch, they say this switch is so much better, you won't need as many headcount to manage it. And you justify buying the new switch, and then you get rid of the headcount, and then you find you can't drive it. It's like having a Ferrari in the garage.
And it sounds so believable if you've never actually been in ops and don't understand what day-to-day is like and what it's like to really run it at an IT shop down at the bit level where you're actually doing the configuration and the building and the running day-to-day.
So managed service providers, and this is where my debate comes in, is managed service providers, which leads into a discussion around myths and fallacies and incompetence in the SD-WAN. So managed service providers today are companies who out there who take your routed WAN and all those routers at the edge of the network and all those MPLS services, and they'll do it for you. And to be fair, the way that routers were and are today and how incompetent those products are compared to what SD-WAN is now, there's good reasons to outsource, right? You want to get, you need headcount to go out there and manage a router. Like if you want to replace a router, you can't just send a general skilled person out there. You have to send a specially skilled working in some arcane CLI. They might actually need to have specific knowledge or specific preparation to be able to work on the specific box that you want, like a checkpoint or a Palo or a Cisco ISR, or a Juniper Junos box. They all work differently. Nothing is the same. So you can't just sort of say, I'll just hire some remote hands and they can do it for me. You actually need to have the service provider offers value in the sense that in theory, they will have people who know that sort of stuff, right? And they will manage the MPLS services. So you've got all this bandwidth running over telco MPLS backbones, and managing those MPLS backbones is painful, mostly because the telcos are incompetent. They can't, they're not very efficient at running their businesses. They don't know where the services are. Quite often, an MPLS service will run from one telco to another telco to another telco to give you your end-to-end service. And bringing all that together is really, really difficult, as you know.
I've been a victim of that many times, where it got to the point when I'd turn up an international circuit, I'd have to say, yeah, you guys have a relationship with us and so, and you need to tag it like this. And he'd be like, how did you know that? Because I've done this 8 times before. You guys make the same mistake every time. You don't know what you're doing. Sorry, it's the caffeine, man. I am all wound up on this show. I'm sorry. Anyway, keep going, buddy. Keep going.
So first of all, let's just acknowledge that managed service providers have a value to add in the old days, if that makes sense, right? I believe that. There was this one. Somebody in our Slack channel once said, he said, I've got a problem with one of my circuits. At the 3-hour mark, AT&T declared that the circuit was good and that there were no issues found on the circuit. The technician explained that we should verify power. And at the 7-hour mark, AT&T would tell them that it was their last mile provider, Verizon, had deprovisioned the 1 gigabit per second transport, and that was the cause of our outage. Now, that's gross incompetence. AT&T was flat out lying to the person who owned the service, and it was Verizon, their subcontractor, had deprovisioned the 1 gigabit transport, and that was the cause of the outage. Now, that's just right. So now you know why you need managed service providers, because troubleshooting that yourself is painful, and who's got time for that? Now, with the flip to SD-WAN, let's talk about SD-WAN. My point would be, just to set this up, is you don't need a managed service provider anymore. And let me try and run through some of the arguments and some of the reasons why. One of the first ones is SD-WAN devices run Linux almost universally, and they don't need special skills. And quite often those boxes are actually just standard x86 boxes, right? So if you're going to deploy an SD-WAN unit somewhere out in your branch network, you don't actually need specialist skills. You just need, well, maybe not a janitor, or maybe not somebody who's new to all the technology things, but quite often it can just be a high skill student with some computer skills.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that Linux is a special skill, because some people are like, I'm a Windows person. But generally speaking, right, I agree with that. Yep.
And in any case, one of the tricks here is that SD-WAN devices themselves actually have big hard drives in them now, basically SSDs usually. And instead of the old days where we used to have a 4 meg flash or a couple of gigs of flash that needed TFTP to upload images to, these things just auto-boot, and they don't lose the old images. They just keep them forever. So a lot of this device stuff isn't the same. Now, if you are planning on running an SD-WAN, so let's just paint the picture of an SD-WAN, right? There's an SD-WAN controller in the center, right? All of the SD-WAN vendors have an SD-WAN controller in the cloud. Some of them let you do it on-prem, but nearly all of them. Is there any that don't do it as a cloud-managed service now?
Not that I can think of. Everybody's got a cloud. Everyone starts with cloud. That's the default. And then a few of them give you that on-premises controller option. Yeah.
Okay. So let's just talk about the SD-WAN controller for a minute. The SD-WAN controller itself is a managed service. That is, the SD-WAN vendor manages that for you. Right? The managed service provider
managing it for you is a little bit of a stretch. I know the point you're making, but yeah.
Yeah, the point I'm making is that you don't need to be installing Microsoft Windows or Linux or Kubernetes on top to deploy, 20 containers of this application software. And you don't have to upgrade it, on Saturday for 8 hours. You don't have to, all that sort of stuff that we used to have to do with the network monitoring.
Right? Oh, yeah, that's a fair point. It is a little more than merely hosting. Yeah, it is a little more than that. Right. Okay. Yeah.
But in the old days, that was actually quite arcane. So we would, that was a service that managed service providers would give us. They would go out and install network monitoring tools and network configuration management tools, and then they would monitor that network for you. And that was a specialist skill back then. My point would be is that today, that is no longer a specialist skill. That is something that's done by the SD-WAN vendor, right? You don't need a managed service provider to do that for you. Whichever SD-WAN product you go and buy, you get the controller. That's a managed service. It does configuration management. It does asset management. It does PKI for you. It does analytics and telemetry. It gets upgraded on a regular basis for you. You license it per year, so you don't even have to, you know, one of the things about a lot of the telco was that you didn't have to buy a management tool. You could just rent it and they would lob it into the bill for you. All that's taken care of, right? So all of a sudden, what's the value of a managed service provider if you can just get exactly the same operations console and management console that they're getting? Because they're not getting any different SD-WAN to the one you've got, right? Is that unreal? Is that silly?
Well, we'd have to, I think maybe what's happened here is we could draw the line differently between the sort of businesses that actually would still need a managed service for this, as opposed to, you know, the old days. You just described a lot of pain in the butt services that a lot of companies would just rather outsource because it's too painful. And as and the point you're making, a lot of those services are now handled by the SD-WAN. So the line is moved. The bar is changed here to where I make a decision of doing it in-house versus outsourcing it. And the case you're making that I think is a very good one is I might have outsourced it before, but do I really need to anymore? Probably not. I think I can bring SD-WAN in-house.
I think so. Now, let me ask you, so the obvious thing about bringing it in-house is where do I get SD-WAN skills from? And the answer is there are none. It's a new technology.
Right.
Right. Now, does that mean that your MSP has got SD-WAN skills that you don't? No, actually, because they haven't got the SD-WAN skills either because there aren't any.
Oh, baby, right? Let me jump into this for a second because, okay, so you think, oh, I'm going to give this over to the MSP. Mm. They're all smart and they got the big brains and they know what's up. All right, I've worked in some of these environments. It goes back some years. So let me tell you what really goes on inside an MSP, some of these. And some of the MSPs that listen to us, because we have a lot of you friends of ours work in this space. Yes. We know we're not talking about you. We're talking about those other people. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
But the issue becomes one of competence. What's really happening inside the MSP? Do you think the MSPs are hiring a bunch of CCIE level kind of engineers to sit there and look at the console and monitor your WAN that they've outsourced to you? And then and nod and look at things and think, oh, we're going to move this here. And someone's working with a mouse and a GUI or an API and a Python script to change your SD-WAN every day. No, they hire the cheapest operators they can to monitor your network and do break fix. If they hire anybody at all, monitoring might be pager duty that sends a message off to someone's phone who's sitting with a customer and a calendar that is 16 items deep. And they're like, oh, crap, something just broke on so-and-so's SD-WAN. That's supposedly I wasn't going to have to think about it. It was just going to run. Reality is that MSP is not looking at your network. They aren't thinking about your network. They don't even care about your network as long as there's no red lights.
They might even not know that you exist until something breaks.
Exactly. If you're not complaining and if you're paying your bill, that network of yours probably isn't on anyone's mind at that MSP whatsoever. That is reality. Yes. And again, this is from me having worked in some of these environments. Okay. Rant over, Greg. Go ahead.
Now, you've worked in MSPs and I've worked for MSPs, and I know that they don't do skills development. Basically, what they do is they just find somebody who's available, say, off you go, right? So the MSPs, my point would be is that MSPs and SD-WAN skills, because I've sat there through these sessions in a number of conferences lately, and they're going like, it's very serious. SD-WAN is very difficult, and only we have the expertise to be able to do this. And I'm laughing, literally laughing, because I know they don't, because nobody does. No one's done SD-WAN. Like, oh, sure, there's plenty of people we've talked to in our shows, and there's like quite a few. There's, I think the number I heard the other day was 18,000 SD-WAN deployments worldwide. Okay, let's say it's 10,000, pick a number. It's still not 500,000 companies in the world or a million companies in the world that have got SD-WAN, right? It's still a relatively small number. The market is just starting to reach critical mass and it's starting to get out there. So if your boss says, oh, but we need MSPs with service SD-WAN skills, doesn't happen, right? So the second point I want to talk about, and this is where MSPs come into you, is let's talk about SD-WAN. Now, all of the research that I've seen indicates that SD-WAN saves money on your WAN bandwidth by up to 70%. Now, it varies a little bit according to whether you're which geography you're in. So I was watching some telegeography research, and basically what they said was if you're in South Africa, you can get up to 30% by getting off the services over there. And because the internet is much more expensive there, in Australia, you can save about 40%. But if you can go to Europe or America, you can cut your WAN cost by 70%. It varies a little bit from geography to geography.
I'm surprised those stats are still out there, Greg, just in the sense that I kind of thought that part of the SD-WAN story was over because reality is, a bit different from, you're going to save money on bandwidth. That story's still out there.
Apparently
and you're quoting not. These stats, so keep going.
Apparently not. I'm agreeing with you. I thought at some point MPLS services would be discounted, but I think that people who run the MPLS networks figure that they might as well screw the customers for the maximum point of time. Until such time as the game is up.
Yeah, commercial break. I mean, you should be harassing if you're not getting a break on your MPLS circuit, start beating them up and saying you're going to go SD-WAN. And I think it's a lot easier to break that barrier down now than it was. Anyway, go ahead.
So here's my point. If you're sitting there negotiating with an MSP or a telco who's currently selling you $5 million worth of WAN services, and at the end of it, they're going to be selling you $2 million worth of WAN services, do you really think they're going to pass all that savings on to you?
Yes. Oh. Wait, no.
The conflict of interest inherent in that discussion is, hi, Mr. Telco, who I've been paying way over the odds for this bandwidth for years and years. I want you to come in and cut the cost by 70% because my consultancy tells me that I should be able to do that. And they come in and go, we could cut 30% off it by switching to SD-WAN. They're going to try and capture as much of that revenue themselves, right? They're going to screw you one way or the other. And I figured there was a presentation which I saw, and this person said, we could have saved as much as 70% off our WAN budget, but we chose to go with 40%. So we could give some margin to the MSP to do that for us. Okay, that's a fair decision as long as you know that. But if you're going to be dealing with a managed service provider, just be ready to say to yourself, are these people really passing me through the cost savings? And how am I going to know that? So if you get into a negotiation with a managed service provider and you say, what am I saving money on? What am I going to be doing? Then this is where we're at. You want to be saying to yourself, the MSP has no incentive whatsoever to give you the discounts that SD-WAN can give you. What are you going to do to make them give you those discounts? That's the question that's on my mind.
It's always the threat of taking your business somewhere else, right? So, if you say, and obviously this is where you're headed, that I'm going this direction to save money, I'm going to be ordering these other circuits, then that's the stick that you can wield, that threat being a realistic threat that you can do it. I don't think it's realistic for all customers, depending on how entrenched they are with the vendor and what their processes are and their buying process and so on. But for a lot of people, it's a viable threat, a stick that can be waved.
Yes. So that to me is a thing, right? That is that if I was working with a managed service provider, can I trust them to give past the discounts to me? Because one of the big things about SD-WAN is you need those discounts to justify spending money on an SD-WAN. Otherwise, why not just keep your routers for another 5 years, for another 10 years, right?
Well, then you are having a different conversation then. I mean, I think there's some nuance you left off of there about how you could justify it. But if it's not purely cost, then obviously you're going into it's because it's operational savings, it's improved level of service, it's... you fill in the blanks with those, the business impact and value prop that's beyond dollars.
Okay. So the next point I want to make is static versus dynamic technology. In the old days of routing, when you were providing a layer 3 WAN to somebody, it was static. You rolled out the routers, you configured the IP addresses, you selected a routing protocol, and then you basically stopped futzing with it. You might fiddle around with QoS a little bit because you had nothing better to do most of the time. And maybe you think that, in the end of the day, QoS was basically trying to work around the fact that you couldn't afford to buy more bandwidth, right? I think we agree on that these days, do we?
And not only, as far as the QoS.
Generally, a broad, gross simplification. There are, of course, niche use cases. And let's just have a go at this, right? Stop throwing niche use cases in my face. I was on stage and this guy said, but there's customers out there and they're in places where there's not good internet. I'm going, one in 10,000, buddy. Like, stop taking niche use cases and turning them into a core purpose, right? You can say you're going to drive a car to work, but it's very dangerous. You might die, right? But guess what? You still drive the car to work.
But that FUD plays to the engineering mind that wants all problems solved.
Yeah, but there's a good chance, there's a reasonably good chance that you could die driving to work, even if it's only 5 to 10 miles down the road. And in theory, the longer you drive, the more likely you are to die in a car accident or worse, right? So the point, don't throw up corner use cases. When you work about this, think about your whole network. If you've got a network with 100 sites, just how many of them actually matter? Usually it's about half a dozen, right? So let's just keep a sense of scale and don't conflate a trivial use case in the corner of your network that's got something. Make sure that you're catering to use cases that matter to the business overall, where the big dog. So static versus dynamic technology, I want to come to this. The point in about SD-WAN is that it's dynamic. It should change all the time. The bandwidth should be flip-flopping over available circuits. It should be using 3, 4, 5 WAN circuits, right? Maybe one. Here's an interesting idea with WAN bandwidth. Instead of having 2 circuits, have 5. Have them from 2 different providers. Buy 3 services on provider A and 2 services on provider B. So if the physical circuit from provider A goes down, you've still got 4 others that it can load balance across. That is not realistic on MPLS because of the phenomenal cost of an access circuit. But on an internet, not at all impractical, right? Just because you don't get caught up on A, B, primary provider, secondary provider, I need redundant paths, just buy lots and give yourself a better chance. Like SD-WAN doesn't care.
Your traditional loving WAN that you crafted with one MPLS circuit and maybe a backup circuit and only one circuit's active at a time, all that goes away with SD-WAN. Mm-hmm. Right. If you throw 5 circuits added, you've got an aggregate amount of bandwidth that you're working with now. It's not like a routing protocol that converges on a single line. It is able to, SD-WAN is able to push traffic across all lines at a time as long as SLAs are met.
Yep.
Yep.
And they don't have to be even numbered, and they don't even have to be the same. They don't even have to be symmetric. They don't have to be anything. They can be 5G, DSL, cable. They can be fiber optic. I don't care. Pick one, right? Anyway, that's a different point. But the dynamic nature of this is that the traffic will be balanced. You won't know which circuit it's going over at any point in time. You have to accept the dynamic nature of this.
Which again, just to underscore your WAN router point from earlier that you, when you opened up this section and said, you know, usually you build a WAN router in a traditional MPLS kind of way. You don't fuss with it once it's built. Right. Why? Hmm. Not just because it's a critical link to other parts of your infrastructure, but also because it tends to be the most complex configuration you've got to cope with. And if you screw with that thing, access lists and prefix lists and right, there's a strong risk that you're going to really blow something up in a bad way. And so unless you're the one that built it, you might not want to mess with it. Even if you are the one that built it, you can look at that thing and go, oh crap, I don't remember what I did when I built this thing, I'm scared. So yeah, you just end up wanting to leave it alone.
And now the interesting thing about SD-WAN products is that they're not as vulnerable to this. They're not given to blast radius issues like routing was. Yes, they are a federated network of issues, but most of the configurations are fairly robust in their own right. It's certainly possible to blow them up by futzing with the routing, don't get me wrong, but conceptually it's a lot easier because the automation is accurate and precise. And in some SD-WAN providers, it's actually very difficult to make mistakes because they prevent you from doing dumb routing things, right? That also means you can't do tricksy routing or funsy routing. You may be limited in what you can do, but that's a feature as much as a bug. And I want to come back to this dynamic and static. So the answer is your SD-WAN is moving all the time. It's dynamic all the time. The other issue here is that it's going to be changing all the time. As customers move from, you know, Office 365 on-prem to Office 365 off-prem, the security services that we see coming into the network, when we talk about, you know, services that adding in new services in the data center or maybe out on the SaaS, new SaaS services come in, you need to be constantly reconfiguring that network. Do you think that a managed service provider who has no history of configuring networks for a living is the right person to pick up your SD-WAN? Like, you've worked for one of these people. They're not futzing with your WAN. They make money by doing nothing to that WAN.
That's exactly right. you end up outsourcing to a firm that may just be doing a poor job when, ironically, just going back to your main point here, SD-WAN isn't hard. Yeah, if you got someone on your staff that can do it and make it work for your company, that's the better way to go. SD-WAN's not that magic. Again, we're making this assumption that I'm going to outsource to a firm and inside they're going to have all of this magical capability. There, you know what? We need to be a little bit more fair here. We are speaking broadly about MSPs, but are there specialist MSPs that have a high degree of competency with SD-WAN? There are a few. We know some of those people. It's probably not the one hanging a shingle in your town, but there are a few.
It's probably not mega telco, right?
Oh, gosh, they care about you the least, you know, for sure.
Exactly. Right. Now, on to the next topic. I've got a whole bunch of topics to get through here, and we're running out of time. You're just talking so much here, Mr. Banks. What's wrong with you today?
It's me. All right? Yep.
Okay, here's a question for you, and I want you to think about this. If you're thinking to yourself, MPLS is going to be around forever, I kind of agree with you. I do kind of think that there's an MPLS that's going to be around forever. But if I can tell you that I can switch to internet-based services and I can cut 70% out of your WAN budget, how many people are actually going to stick with MPLS in the long run, right? Now, if, let's say, in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, 60% of people are off the MPLS backbone and using internet, you know, public bandwidth for whatever purposes, what happens to the MPLS networks around the world at that point? I just want to ask you that question. Do you think it's going to get better because they get empty? Or do you think that service is going to run like trash because there's not enough money in it, so they don't allocate headcount, they don't keep upgrading the routers and switches, they just let it rot?
I think it's more complicated than that, because MPLS and private MPLS and public internet very often are running on the same physical infrastructure. So I don't know how much of a point there is there that we can make one way or the other. You know, I've talked to enough providers to know that that's the difference between your public internet traffic and your private MPLS traffic, once it arrives from the central office, let's say, is tagging. That's kind of it.
Yeah.
You know, and they make a big deal about, I'm guaranteeing you a certain amount of bandwidth and all that. Eh, maybe. What really happens here from a service provider perspective, if they look at the amount of bandwidth that they got going through, the bits are just coming in a different way potentially, or coming in at a different tier. That is to say, maybe you're pumping a bunch of traffic through your regional ISP that then makes it up to that big telco tier one on their backbone that way. So they're still carrying your bits probably, because you got to transit out of the region somehow and get somewhere instead of sending it through directly via some circuit. So it's more nuanced. It gets even more complicated when you look at last mile, who's actually owning the last mile and how it's getting sent upstream. To going back to your larger question here, would I be maintaining as a service provider my MPLS infrastructure if I'm seeing on the MPLS infrastructure specifically my bandwidth utilization dropping down, virtualized or whatever? Or would I invest therefore more into internet circuits and peering arrangements that way, if I could just dump having to worry about label switch paths and traffic engineering and start to slowly retire that over time? Man, I'd be pumping my traffic over to the internet. I'd be saying, yeah, that sounds good. If I can get rid of all this fancy stuff I got to do now, woo. We're going to pause this podcast conversation for just a moment to hear from sponsor TUFIN, the security policy company. As enterprises embrace digital transformation and adopt new technologies, IT and cloud environments become increasingly complex and vulnerable to attack. In this environment, the network change process can become a security-driven bottleneck. TUFIN has pioneered a security policy management platform to bring automation and analytics to security and network operations. With TUFIN's policy-driven automation, each change can be implemented in minutes instead of days, removing the chance of human error. This can significantly accelerate the development and deployment of revenue-generating apps, providing tangible business value in the nearer term, all while securing the network. How does TUFIN deliver on these promises? In at least four ways. One, end-to-end security change automation. Automate access changes across enterprise firewalls and hybrid cloud platforms to increase productivity and eliminate misconfigurations. Two, unified security policy. Define and enforce a central zone-based segmentation matrix to strengthen security posture and meet regulatory mandates. Three, compliance and audit readiness. Ensure compliance with corporate security policies and external industry regulations with a central console for real-time change tracking, including who made the change, when and why, a complete audit trail, and audit-ready reports. Four, a single pane of glass for managing security policy. TUFIN Central Console provides policy analysis, search and optimization capabilities across vendors and platforms, and features an interactive topology map of the network. TUFIN, the security policy company. Visit them at www.tufin.com and tell them the Packet Pusher sent you. And now, back to the show.
My point would be is that if you think MPLS is going to be around forever and you can do nothing, my point is as people run away from MPLS because of cost and because the benefit of public bandwidth is it's permissionless. One of the biggest things about public internet is it's permissionless. When I need to connect to Ethan, I don't need permission from a telco to set up a circuit between me and him like I did 20 years ago. Because can you imagine 20 or 30 years ago, we would have had to have an international ISDN between us to do this type of stuff. Right? Whereas now, and, which is effectively begging the telco for permission with money, right, and paying for it. Nowadays on the internet, so if we want to just bring in anybody from to join in our calls, they all just connect to the internet. We don't need anybody's permission to make that happen. And this permissionless networking is a real key feature of SD-WAN. Now, it's not there today. SD-WAN vendors aren't able to connect their SD-WANs to other SD-WANs, but I know that they're working on that in the background. So,
oh, and you're so hopeful. I like it when you're cute. Yeah. Oh, Greg, yeah. You think there's going to be interoperability between SD-WAN?
No, there'll be IPSec interoperability. So back down to the standards.
Okay, we'll dumb it down to the lowest common denominator you're suggesting.
Yeah. They're fair not going to do anything. You don't really want to interoperate. You want to lock people into your particular standard.
Well, that's what I mean. I thought it was like, Greg having a puppy dog moment. Weird. You're so cynical most of the time.
No, the vendors won't be able to agree. So they'll dumb down to something like an IPSec or an SSL VPN between the two SD-WANs, and then it'll be into a segment or something like that. No? So that, but still, even that is much simpler than what we do today with IPSec VPNs and trying to route packets and agree common subnets and do triple NAT or something like that. You've done this and I've done this. We have a shared public address space and I NAT into it and they NAT out of it and we right? We don't need that.
I'm having twitching moments remembering trying to write the ASA policy that would make it work. Yeah. Why didn't it work? Right. Reboot it. It works now. Sorry.
So it is reasonable to speculate that MPLS services, this idea of guaranteed bandwidth, the high-priced dedicated bandwidth could collapse over time, is not beyond the realms of possibility, right? So predicting the decline of MPLS services, that is the dedicated bandwidth services that you had today, if there's not enough money flowing into that, and let's face it, dedicated bandwidth is expensive to operate for telcos. Internet services is really cheap. You just sort of put in a big DWDM pipe. And slap a router on the end of it and bang.
We do have to point out that we are going against some of the trend numbers that we've seen published recently where MPLS is still growing. So that is a point that we need to make.
The revenues aren't growing, but the bandwidth is still growing, right? That is, people who have in-house networks today are buying bigger pipes. So MPLS bandwidth might be growing, but MPLS revenue is not. They're selling the small bandwidth for the same money, or less money, actually. It's shrinking at about 5% per annum. Is the research I've seen. Have you seen something different?
I have that. I thought revenue was still growing as well, although it was a reduced rate, but I could not pull up that report quickly enough to quote it back to you. So case, fair enough.
I win.
Fair enough.
Now, the next point I want to make here is SD-WAN is a developing. It's an emerging technology. There's a lot happening. Now, we'll dive into a little bit about this, but my point would be is that outsourcing a developing technology is pretty dumb. In fact, massively dumb. It's okay to outsource something that is commoditized, well understood, that everybody knows about. It goes back to my toilet cleaning story, right? Everybody knows that the toilet is working okay and that it's clean, usually by a visual inspection. Maybe a couple of times a year, you bring in somebody to check there's no germs on the walls or whatever and on the taps, but otherwise, good to go. But if you're talking about SD-WAN, here's my pitch around why managed service providers would not be competent at SD-WAN over time. And that is, we're seeing a massive transition in SD-WAN technology, and we've seen this in the shows. If you go and check out all the vendor shows that we've done on SD-WAN over the last, you'll have seen them go from this path dynamics SD-WAN with a centralized controller doing dynamic path switching, using application recognition to switch over available paths. And we've had lots of discussions around per packet flows or per flow flows and load balancing this. And then we have people like Talari and doing, you know, packet replication. So if your voice absolutely has to get through, then you duplicate it on all the circuits. And at the other end, they'll pick the one that gets it first. Or you can go to Silver Peak and their SD-WAN will turn on the WAN acceleration capability. And you might only turn that WAN acceleration on 5 or 10% of your SD-WAN devices. But if that's what you need, then that's actually now table stakes. Those types of first generation SD-WAN features are what I see as we're there. And now you should be out there buying SD-WAN phase one. What we are seeing is SD-WAN phase two. So let me try and pitch you a vision, Mr. Banks, of what SD-WAN phase two looks like.
Ingesting mushrooms. I'm ready for the vision.
Ingesting mushrooms, right? Now here, the point is that security in the branch has become a big deal. Capital B, capital D. And the people who make SD-WAN products have realized that if they can snap security into that, they can take money away from firewall companies and securities companies. And there are companies in the cloud who are putting together security inspection engines. And people realize that if I can go to my branch, and do local branch breakout to the internet, I can send all of my user traffic directly into a cloud broker who then does content logging, content inspection, malware detection, threat analysis, all that sort of stuff. So all of a sudden, your branch edge has become a security point. Now, taking this a step further, some companies are actually taking the whole security to the branch and building SOCs, so security operation centers, that treat the branch as an edge network, and every SD-WAN device is a firewall and a security control point. And it might be a control point with VPNs, it might be content inspection, threat detection, malware detection, all that stuff, right? So that's phase two of security, is authenticating users, logging users, user management, and all that.
It's phase two, but networking. It's complicated because we have a lot of vendors that are in this space, and there's two here. You've described one, the SD-WAN vendor who did the phase one and had all the cool demos 4 or 5 years ago, and we're past that part. Now they're adding on the security features. But the flip side is we've also got the security companies who are taking their firewall, edge box, and then putting typically really entry-level SD-WAN features in. So we can call that phase two, where we've combined in all these other features, but what you actually get varies widely by what the product is and who the vendor is and putting it out. So it's a little hard to say, oh, phase two includes all of these things, because, man, it doesn't for sure. You don't really know what the boxes are that have been checked until you sit and do a feature matrix and figure that out.
Yeah, so Fortinet's got an SD-WAN. Now Fortinet is out buying threat detection companies so that the branch box will have SD-WAN path dynamics built into it. Palo Alto's developing its SD-WAN functionality in-house. I don't know what Checkpoint's doing in this space. It's really, really interesting. And think about this. There's a whole bundling going on here. Instead of going to the branch and buying a router, then a firewall, and then a VM to run the content inspection and redirecting with WCCP, and then doing threat detection, and then putting an application firewall upgrade in, and then threat detection feed, threat analysis, and then a proxy server to do all the logging, right? This is all just one box. And it's standardized. Now, a lot of the way that it works, the mechanics of this is not, we won't get into that today. Listen to the podcast that we've done on SD-WAN. But the basic point is that the phase two of SD-WAN is you put a box out there at the edge and it's a full security system. So the days of trombining the traffic all the way down to the data center where you've got some mega firewall cluster with Uber powers and it's worth a couple of million dollars worth of threat inspection and logging and rules and that, it's all at the edge of the network now.
Yeah, and there's a big bit of context here that I don't know that we actually said, but that is the edge of the network. You're not backhauling all the traffic back to headquarters. You don't want to do that. You want to bring in internet bandwidth to that branch, to that edge, and utilize that directly, because most of your services aren't living in headquarters anymore anyway. They're probably in the cloud. So you really, really don't want to be backhauling traffic, which means you have a need for all of those security and inspection services, et cetera, to live at that network edge.
Okay, so we agree that security in the SD-WAN. Now, let's get back to managed service providers. How many managed service providers have you worked for can spell security?
Okay, I'm going to wind up. Okay, here we go. Okay, so what are you getting if you have a managed service provider that is providing you some kind of security service? I mean, it's going to depend widely, of course, and on individual people and engineers that work within that MSP. But typically speaking here, speaking very generalized, you're getting SecOps kind of at best. You're probably not getting forensic analysis. You're probably not getting zero-day prevention. You're not getting anything magic here. They're doing software installation for you. They're probably ignoring all the events that roll in. Because, hey, you would, and you're just one company. They're supposedly managing a bunch of them. You think they're actually looking at all of those events? No, they're not. Unless you call with a problem, then they go, they're paying us to do the security stuff. Hey, that means we got all these log events we can look at and so on and so on. And then maybe they dig in there and security data becomes a part of the troubleshooting process.
Yeah.
It's just they just loaded a bunch of stuff and hoping it works for you and hands
off,
walk away.
So you think AT&T and Verizon's managed services division are going to be able to run a SOC at a level of competency that you would expect?
I want to believe that. I want to believe I walk into the amazing SecOps center and it's like the Starship Enterprise in there and it's just like awe-inspiring, and I doubt it.
You just know it's not. Yeah. And, you know, so British Telecom in the UK here used to have a big professional services business. Like, running professional services business is really, really hard. And one of the things that all of these big companies have discovered is that their professional services businesses don't make the money and they're all walking away from outsourcing. Truly, that is actually a true story. So here in the UK, BT Global Services is being wound down, I think at the rate of 10 to 20% per year. So as they exit out of these outsourcing contracts that they were so popular with. It's actually a dying business. IBM's professional services, IBM makes money out of professional services by moving it offshore to India. And they literally subcontracted back out. Now, let's not, don't get me started on subcontracting because that's a whole new story, right? Can you imagine doing a deal with somebody like IBM or BT and then they outsource it to some company in India who then outsources it to somebody else? Now, I've done this, right? I've been a part of a company where the company A had the master outsourcer. They subbed it out to an infrastructure provider who then subbed it out to another provider in India. And that, well, that company then subbed it out to somebody else in India. Do you know how hard it was to get a change in the routing protocol?
Was there some lead time, do you think?
Oh, yeah. It took them 8 weeks before they gave up and sent me
home. And did they do it wrong the first four times?
Oh, it was a mess because the person who was right down the bottom was a CCNA. And this was a hugely complicated. And I remember talking to the person, they go like, I've got no idea. He said, I've got no skills, no training. He
CCNA said, I just or brain dump CCNA, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? I did not get that far down. So I guess my point here is that if you believe, can your managed service provider actually add value to the security functions? Now, the trick here also, again, is coming back to the point we made a lot earlier, is a lot of the SD-WAN companies are actually providing the whole security package built in. You don't need to do the forensic logging. You don't, like the thing, the running your own SIEM is a thing of the past. You just send it off to a cloud service and there's your SIEM handled, right?
There's a couple of things happening there. Yeah, exactly that which you just said. And then also you have an opt-in opportunity to take part in all of their other customers that are feeding them threat information and logs and data and so on. So there's an aggregate customer benefit that you, if again, you have to opt in. But if you choose to participate in that, I'm going to say it, ML, AI. So there's algorithms here that are beginning to learn more about threats from a global perspective, not just your own corporate perspective. That, again, takes it out of the hands of the human being. The software is doing it for you. You'd have to be, I think, a little naive to think the MSP humans that you talk to in the shiny suits when they came and talked on the whiteboard and everyone had a nice lunch, you're not going to talk to that person again once the deal is signed. That person's gone. There aren't other people that are there that are going to give their experience and human insight into things. What's the point? Go back to the software-defined WAN provider with the security built in. They've got the engines that can do this for you.
Yeah. And the point here is that you still need somebody in-house interpreting the impact. So if there's a security event, the managed service provider rings up and says, we've got a security event in branch 25, and you've got nobody in-house to understand what that means, what are you going to do? Right? There's no point in outsourcing that. You have to have the skills in-house. In the same way that you have invoicing in-house or purchase ordering is done in-house or general ledgers, or you don't outsource your management to a third party. You might bring in a consultant every now and then to keep your management team on their toes, or you might bring in an auditor to review the accounting from time to time to keep them on their toes. But you don't outsource that function because it has to be in-house to add value to the business.
Hang in there for a moment while I share with you the Network Makeover event put on by sponsor Ixia. December 2nd through December 13th, 2019, Ixia is running this event containing information about how you can turn your network data into dynamic network intelligence. Yeah, right here. From an engineering perspective, what is Ixia getting at, quote, turning data into dynamic intelligence? All right, let's say you run a network management station, because you do. What data do you get out of an NMS? Red light, green light, graph showing bandwidth consumption, device stuff like temps and power supply status, and from there you probably build a bunch of alert triggers that fire off notifications when bad stuff is happening. And that's all fine as far as it goes, but what if you could feed all of that data and a whole lot more, like packet flows and so on, into an ingestion engine that analyzes the network data and gives you insights into what's going on down on the wire? Yeah, monitoring devices and interfaces, that's okay, it's important, but the real action isn't in monitoring the highway. You want to understand the cars going down the road, because that's how you make sense of what your network is good for and actions you might need to take to improve it, to secure it. The Network Makeover event by Ixia is going to show off how to get that done with Ixia gear. They really want you to be there, so they are sweetening the deal with giveaways. One fortunate human is going to get $50,000 worth of Ixia hardware and software. You got to pick what you want, up to $50,000 in value. Another 50 folks are going to get an Ixia swag bag. And if you don't care about giveaways, fine. You can still get access to Ixia publications covering industry best practices for data access, data processing, inline security monitoring, and core-to-edge monitoring, that whole dynamic network intelligence idea. The network makeover will be held from December 2nd through December 13th, 2019. It's a virtual thing. You don't have to travel anywhere. Register via ixiacom.com/packetpushers. One more time, you register via ixiacom.com/packetpushers. And now back to the show. So let me play devil's advocate and flip this on its head. Now, we could make the argument that maybe you talk to a specialized MSP and written into the contract is exactly how they respond to security events. It's just that that's not my experience. That's not the kind of environments I've worked in that offer those services. That's not just reality.
Like, you can't predict the security event. You have to be flexible and reactive and adaptive. You know, if it's a data breach where the CEO is going down and somebody's, you know, been spearfishing them to pay invoices for a $20 million invoice, you can't let a third party handle that. You can bring in a third party to help you for specialist advice, but you have to have the core competency and the core interpretation in-house, I believe. Anyway, so did we make that point?
Yeah, we made that point hard. MSPs are not going to like us at this point. I think.
No.
Of people that are got crossed arms and furrowed brows, and they're upset with Ethan and Greg right now.
So this is an evolving situation, right? And remember, just because an MSP goes away doesn't mean that networking goes away. So I want to point a picture here. Now, if I had to, what happens when you in-house this? What happens if you've got to bring, so if we're saying to you, bring your SD-WAN in-house, here's the question is, how hard is that? Is it hard? Is it super hard? Or is it trivial? Okay. I think networking today is hard. That is because most of our networks are complex, but most of that's self-inflicted, right? Because most network engineers sort of fiddle around with the network. We do strange and weird things, and we really shouldn't, but we do. And the second thing is devices are actually unreliable in both software and hardware, right? Software bugs are commonplace. Low-quality hardware is widely used. Here's the thing for you. Have you ever wondered if the low-quality hardware is actually to justify high-priced maintenance contracts? Just a thought for today. There's definitely a financial incentive there, right? Ship low quality hardware.
I don't think the hardware is quite the problem that the software is. The software is the huge problem. But anyway, yeah, all right.
You know, and then of course the devices that are out there are very non-standard. They use arcane CPUs and arcane. They use model specific. Like if you've ever had a router or a firewall with modules in it, that locks you into a non-standard hardware platform. And that means that a vendor has to have spare parts stock just for that wing wall. You can't just pull another one off the shelf and ship it to site because you have this arcane hardware in place, right?
Open compute projects taken care of all that. Oh, wait, no, it hasn't. None of us can buy off OCP. Just the elites.
Well, SD-WAN is all x86 appliances, right?
It is.
And then, of course, you've got the lack of monitoring and management tools. Most networks today still don't have monitoring and management tools available to them because they're an add-on. And so most people say, can't afford the add-on, I'll just buy the... You know, the vendor who's selling you the router somehow always takes the management budget into buying more hardware, right? But anyway, we could go on and on. There's a whole bunch of things here. So if you're going to do managing an SD-WAN type thing, I think you need to think about this when you think about an SD-WAN solution. You don't need experts to replace SD-WAN hardware. Zero-touch provisioning and automated setup procedures and a controller in the cloud with asset management and configuration management make the recovery time very short and relatively simple.
Okay, so we got to pause for a moment here. You had said, is it trivial, hard, or impossible, basically? And I think the features that you just described, zero-touch provisioning and automation, put it somewhere between trivial and hard because once it's set up and it's all working, zero-touch provisioning, for example, it is trivial. Mm-hmm. You do have some upfront investment to make it all work. Depending on your implementation, depending on your scenario, depending on the vendor, the SD-WAN vendor, what they're offering you. So let's not make it dismissively easy and trivial. There is an investment
to get this thing rolling. Like I can remember going out to sites and trying to replace a router with custom modules using a version software that could only obtain from a single place, right? Whereas if you have an SD-WAN controller, it does all of that. It downloads the operating system. It updates the configuration. It restores all the crypto keys. All that stuff is handled pretty much automatically, okay, once you get the connectivity up. I think a second thing here, too, is that a lot of SD-WAN vendors actually handle the maintenance contracts and the case management in their SD-WAN in the online platforms. So one of the reasons for going to an MSP was that they would handle the maintenance contract and they would stock spares and they would do stuff like that. Like, and when they would have a case and then they would call up the vendor and arrange for the box to be shipped aside. The whole SD-WAN platforms actually integrate all of that hardware replacement into them.
So there's a piece of that where if you're thinking, how would that ever happen? There's just a box that they ship me. Yeah, but they touch that box to make it a part of your SD-WAN environment before they actually ship it to you, and you're going to claim that thing. So there's this aspect of the vendor actually knowing who you are and that piece of hardware belonging to you. So right, what we're adding here, what you're pointing out is that maintenance and support functionality, they already know who you are and what all your devices are. It's not like this is a difficult bit of service to add.
Yep. And keep in mind that an x86 box running at the edge of your network. Now, if you actually think that hardware replacement is magic and requires specialist skills, you might want to think about an SD-WAN vendor who uses open boxes. So, for example, there's a thing called the Dell Edge Gateway or the HP EdgeLine product families. Have you seen these? They're little x86 boxes in a 19-inch rack unit format. Standard x86 come with 4 or 8 ports. Standard hardware. So if you have a service contract with Dell or HPE, you can just get these added into your existing server, desktop, laptop maintenance contract, and you can get them to ship them to site for you.
And they're going to be cheap.
Just put the,
compared to
SD-WAN software on top of them.
Yep.
Right? And if your site is for some arcane reason, a HA pair is not enough for you for whatever reason, buy 3 hardware boxes and then have the software ready to go. Just don't have the license enabled or something like that, right? Think of new ways to do this, right? So there are ways to come. If that geographic distribution of stuff is a pain for you, then think about using an SD-WAN platform that uses open hardware underneath, like a HP Dell Edge Gateway or a HP EdgeLine, rather than buying some arcane SD-WAN device where you've got the device and the software integrated, right? Keep in mind that software licenses are expensive and hardware is cheap. Have spares, right? If you can get the two separated, the vendors these days are billing you for the software licenses, not for the hardware so much. And then, as I said earlier, deploy multiple WAN circuits. Don't just go from 2 MPLS to 2 internets. Go to 4 internets, because then all of your NTUs are redundant, right? Why not have just lots of this stuff? Why futz around? If you're saving 70% of the money, then spend a little to make it better.
And please don't buy them all from the same provider. Then you're missing one of the major points as far as I'm concerned.
If that's your only choice, that's still more reliable than having multiple services. Then it's still more reliable than having only 1 or 2 services, right? So you'll still need headcount to operate this SD-WAN if you have been outsourcing. So plan on hiring. My advice here would be to hire people at senior levels for strategy and analysis, because you don't need junior roles. You don't need people adds, moves, and changes, adding users, adding, doing stuff to the routers at the edge of the network. What you need is people doing deep analysis, monitoring the security, responding to security alerts, helping with the hardware replacements, wherever that might be. Some of the tools inside of the SD-WAN show you that, all of a sudden your core business application is dropping performance in this area. Because the deep packet inspection in the SD-WAN appliances shows you these brownouts, you'll start to see things that you've never seen before. How many times, here's a thing for you, Ethan, how many times have we done shows with people who've deployed SD-WAN appliances and gone, we actually find it's faster over the internet than we do our MPLS?
I don't know how many people have been public about it on shows. At least one that I can remember where we had that exact conversation and we were both like, really? And then it starts coming out in the back channel with people that we know in Slack and other friends of ours going, surprisingly, as SD-WAN has been monitoring our internet-based circuits that are in theory crap and our MPLS circuits that are in theory driven by unicorns and empowered by magical rainbows, the MPLS unicorn rainbow circuits, the crappy one in the internet one's delivering better service, and most of their traffic's on the internet circuit most of the time, according to the SD-WAN performance measurements and SLA requirements. It's unbelievable.
I just want to, just think creatively. This is very difficult for ITIL because creative thinking in most IT departments is just not allowed. And so it is difficult. And the flip side here, as we get into the end run here, right, is I want to point out, I want to come back here to competency and expertise. The biggest reason that you outsource your WAN is not because you've got an internal incompetency. It's usually an executive incompetency. So the biggest challenge you have to overcome here is that most executives don't feel confident about the WAN. They don't feel that they understand their infrastructure and they're incompetent. And that is the biggest challenge that you're going to find. If you bring something back in-house, you're probably going to end up with what I call a competency challenge, where IT executives have to maintain skills. They have to maintain talent and they have to maintain headcount. That means training and working with people about their personal goals and working on budgets with headcount. And if you've got incompetent executives, which most of us have, and they keep talking about the pressure of reducing headcount as budget shrinks, that's actually a sign of incompetent managers. You don't see the accounting department shrinking. You don't see the number of executives in companies shrinking, right? Getting rid of them and just outsourcing the management of that team over there. That doesn't happen. And that's what you need to be able to pitch. So when you start talking about SD-WAN projects inside, you need to say to people, we need to do this as part of digital transformation. We need to be able to connect to the cloud. Yeah, we're not in the public cloud today, but part of our goal of our SD-WAN is to be connected to the cloud in a secure way. Now, here's my phase three of SD-WAN. I've saved this for the closeout. Ethan, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
If we talked about SD-WAN phase two, which is security at the edge, SOC operations, why stop at the edge where the branch SD-WAN is? Why don't SD-WAN companies just move straight into the device? So you think about this.
The device isn't the endpoint device, like my laptop or my phone or whatever.
Your laptop, your phone. So if I was an SD-WAN company and I bought a mobile device management company, could I extend my SD-WAN straight into that appliance and then connect people who are not on the WAN, not in a branch, not in a physical location, and just attach them to my SD-WAN and use exactly the same security policies? That would be valuable, right?
I've been waiting for that to happen because the other piece of that story that is emerging right now is SD Perimeter. You got all these products that are showing up and branded as SD Perimeter, and there are some SD Perimeter, basically glorified VPN that deals with the endpoints. They have rebranded that into this SD Perimeter category. They're partnering with SD-WAN companies at this point, but doesn't it make sense, exactly as you're describing, Greg, for that to be a unified platform that is managed under one umbrella, unified policy management and so on? Boy, it does.
Becomes zero trust. So you start having identity management. The identity management applies to mobile devices, to laptops, to desktops, your campus, to your wireless. Okay. Doesn't matter where those devices are, they all become part of the SD-WAN. So this is where we're going to see, I believe, ultimately SD-WAN expands to take over the campus Ethernet and expands to take over the campus Wi-Fi. Now, this is much future, 20 years out, 10 to 20 years out. It doesn't make sense to have a separate software-defined controller running your campus and your Wi-Fi if it doesn't unify with the people who are off-prem. It all is one network. So let me give you a redaction.
Real quick before you go there, you're saying 10 to 20 years, but we are seeing in the intention of the industry to go that way now with things like Cisco SD Access, for example. So, and there's been pushes for this in the past with companies like Enterasys before they got bought and so on and so on. I think that's a great point.
Cisco might go the other way. They might take the campus into the SD-WAN. Their SD-WAN strategy isn't working quite as well for them as they had hoped. And they might be looking at their SD campus strategy and saying, if we could go from the wireless and the Wi-Fi in the campus and stretch out into the WAN, that might be more successful there. But that doesn't really matter at the end of the day. If I'm a firewall company like Palo or a Checkpoint, and I'm already doing some mobile device management and moving closer to the endpoint, and we're seeing companies pick up. So Fortinet this week bought an endpoint company, right, to add to their strategy. That is just, if you bundle all that together, you have a very compelling. And keep in mind that once that's entrenched in a customer, you're never getting rid of that stuff. So it's pretty locked in. There, we can have a talk about that a different way. So here's how I see networking. Can you come at that phase three SD-WAN idea where remote access starts with devices doing remote access to the cloud controller? So instead of doing an IPsec VPN to a firewall appliance, VPN appliance in the data center, what happens when it just starts connecting directly to the cloud controller? Like, here's my service in the cloud. And so then once you're VPN'd into the SD-WAN box, then you can access cloud services, you can access Office 365, you can access stuff in the data center, you can do whatever you need, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're again, this SD perimeter service, some of that is already, that model is happening now with a few emerging vendors. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So good luck for MSPs trying to cope with that. That's going to be comical because can you imagine being a managed service provider and doing endpoints and SD-WAN and campus and wireless all in a single package of services? That's pretty amusing. So I think the way we're going to see the networking transition out over the next two decades, and this is important. I think you have to have a strategic vision around how you want to wrap this. If you want to tell a story to the executives about how you need to in-house this, let me put it this way. I think there's two types of networking going forward. There's a data at rest and a data in motion network. Data at rest is the networking that you use in your public cloud in your data center. The data is literally at rest, and there's a networking that connects the hosts together. So it's your data center, be it a cloud or a hosted or whatever. And I think there's one other network, and it's the data in motion network. So the data doesn't sit anywhere. You're not accessing it. And that's your SD-WAN, that's your campus, that's your wireless, that's your 5G, that's your endpoints, wherever they might be. That's your second network. And at some point, all of the WAN campus wireless comes together because that's a network that does data in motion. To be able to take advantage of all those things, instead of having lots of separate networks that aren't the same, I think they're going to converge, they're going to bundle, and they're going to turn into a single thing, and they're all going to integrate the same security tools, the same identity management tools, the same inspection engines, the same logging, and the same controls. And it's all going to be based around application recognition. And this is why you need to have this in-house. If you want to leverage this technology to change the way people access the business services, then you have to have it in-house. And that's why overall, if you either the short view or the long view, managed service providers aren't your friend.
Well, they're not your enemy either. But yes, I know what you're saying. Yeah, right. And that I believe is the takeaway here is if you need to own this competency in-house, it starts with SD-WAN today. It's going to grow into other things over time. We'll see extremely active in the market. You keep pushing it out to these huge timelines, Greg. I think we're going to see some of this happen. I'm hoping we're going to see some of this happen even more quickly. But
the
right.
The future isn't even, you know, as the William Gibson line, the future's here. It's just not evenly distributed. That's
right.
I'm trying to paint a realistic vision. I don't want to scare people. I think it'll come much sooner. I think 5 to 10 years, we'll see early adopters in the same way that early adopters of SD-WAN are here. You know, we started talking about SD-WAN in 2014. It's 2019. You know, the thing I love about SD-WAN controllers now, and it's taken me years to come to grips with this, is that I don't have to operate that controller platform. They do that. I don't have to handle device updates. That's all done by the SD-WAN controller. I don't have to monitor or analyze an SD-WAN. It's all done by the SD-WAN controller. I don't have to do testing, like app performance monitoring or anything. That's all done by the SD-WAN controller. Now, we could argue about the features of this and whether I need a synthetic testing tool as an add-on or whether I need 1,000 eyes to monitor the performance of the public network so I get some visibility into that. That's all part of the solution that you choose. But my point here is that the things that would make network ownership very painful before is pretty much all handled in an SD-WAN platform.
Well, this is a great point to wrap it up because you know what I'm hearing? We're starting to repeat ourselves. So we should probably be done.
This show is actually built around a white paper I wrote for Ignition. So if you are an Ignition member, there's a 5,400-word white paper called SD-WAN Outsourcing Your Incompetence is My Opportunity, which is basically this whole discussion around, you know, this future data in motion and idea, the thing. And maybe that you want to become a member and access that report so you could perhaps look at this in a more considered grown-up way by reading it.
Well, this has been Ethan and Greg, Ethan Banks and Greg Farrow at EC Banks at Ethereal Mind. We are on Twitter and, of course, the show. You can tweet at Heavy Networking via at Packet Pushers. We're on LinkedIn and so on. Hey, we have a newsletter. Did you know that, dear listener, that we have a newsletter? Why, of course, a Human Infrastructure Magazine. Him is loaded with all the best stuff that we found on the internet week by week. Greg, Drew, myself, we write feature articles. We come up with the most interesting technical and otherwise community-oriented, et cetera, articles we think you should be reading because you'll get something valuable out of it. It's free. It doesn't suck. Occasionally, there's like a sponsored message in there, but mostly not. Get the next issue, packetpushers.net/newsletter. And as Greg said, ignition.packetpushers.net, $99 a year. You can get white papers with deep analysis, with video content, things that we're not publishing anywhere else. You can go up and get that $99 a year for all of that content that we're adding. And we have lots and lots of new content coming. We're working with authors. We are writing ourselves and have had a steady flow of content heading into Ignition. Until then, remember that too much networking would never be enough.